All right, everybody, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 27 of our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. We appreciate you tuning in and downloading this next chapter of Dead Man Talking. My name is Alex Dorio. I am your co-host for this journey, one half of the Creatures of the Night, and I am joined yet again in person for our second ever live episode by my wrestling buddy, Extreme T, Travis White. How you doing, man?
I'm great, man. I'm enjoying our second house show here.
That's
or
right.
Or live event, whatever you would call it. They call them live events now, but used to call them house shows. So I guess this is our second ever house show. So yeah, drove down again. No, I'm just kidding. Jokes. Yeah.
If you want to bring Talking Taker to your house or to your city, you know, we are available to do live episodes elsewhere. We'll be happy to do that. We can work that out for you. You can hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. We'd love to do it. Man, we don't have to reserve these to just ourselves. Or if you want to come hang out next time we do a live one, let us know.
Absolutely.
You should have got Shivani. Listeners out there.
Man. We want to get Shivani.
Right down the street.
I know.
It's not too late. We can do another one.
Yeah.
But we are here continuing on our exploration one pay-per-view match at a time through The Undertaker's career. And we are coming upon a historic, memorable match with so much to talk about. We are at October 1996, In Your House, Buried Alive.
Oh, man. Yeah. We mentioned last episode how that was Mankind's theme podcast. In Your House, Mind Games. This one's Undertaker's first one. He's going to get a couple more here as this In Your Houses go. But yeah, this is his first one. Buried Alive. Yeah, like you said, so much to talk about. This is the culmination of, at this point, 6.5 months worth of story, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this show takes place on October 20th, 96. And April 1st is when Mankind debuted. So yeah, 6.5 months of storytelling all coming to fruition here, this one show. Can you imagine that nowadays?
No.
No.
No. It never happens anymore. No, not like that. So, not in that main event style.
Right.
And yeah, not with
this is
much.
The main event of the show.
It is the main event of this show.
There's no title match on the show.
Shawn Michaels has the night off.
Yeah.
He's on commentary. He's
right.
No matches. But yeah, and they've made a huge deal out of this. We've talked about how Undertaker does not need the title, but he is still arguably the top guy, the centerpiece, the cornerstone, not the gravestone. We'll talk about gravestone here in a minute, but he's clearly the cornerstone of the WWF. This pay-per-view is more proof of that. He is in the main event for this feud with Mankind. The whole pay-per-view is built around him, literally. Like, all of the graphics, the entire set design, every piece of this pay-per-view is built around The Undertaker and around this Buried Alive match concept with Mankind. So it's really, really cool to see.
Absolutely. And not only this pay-per-view, but the 4 weeks of Raw and Superstars building up to it. I mean, between Mind Games and Buried Alive, they have this gravestone and this mound of dirt on every single episode. Of course, they're filmed all in the same night, but
well, it's in the middle of the entryway.
Yeah,
so you see it, this headstone, very famous with Mankind and Undertaker's images on there.
That.
Yes, with the date of the show. So you're getting that every time someone walks down the aisle.
No matter who it was, if it was Who or Triple H or
the Pug.
The Pug. The Pug or Farouk Assad? Was that his last name?
Yeah, Farouk Assad. Yep.
Golly. Yeah. Any of them. We walked by, and yeah, the headstone's right there, gravestone, whatever you want to call it. It's cool, man. They had this all planned out, and really neat. And again, we mentioned way back, beginning of this episode of Talking Taker, that Vince saw something in this character from day one. And production-wise, he's built, again, he has an elaborate entrance, whether it was coming on a hearse with a vulture, or whether it's ascending to the heavens to walk with the angels.
Yeah.
Or whether it's literally every night he comes out, he gets the lights down. Last episode we talked about, he has pyro shooting off like Kane. Here he gets his own show. And he's the only guy that up to this point had his own like theme matches too, with casket and coffins. And well, then you had your final curtain.
Final curtain, rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Body bag.
All those things, again, production-wise, Vince McMahon doesn't hesitate to put money into this character. And here he's got a whole pay-per-view built around him. And again, just the production, whether from the graphics like you mentioned, or the headstone, and all of it's just, man, it's just really, you know, Vince McMahon loves his character, you know? It's awesome to see.
It is. And I'm glad you brought up all the craziness of that The Undertaker has been a part of, the ascending to the heavens, all that ridiculous stuff, because I want to talk about that here at the beginning, because I was excited to go back and watch this, because I remember watching this as a kid. I remember seeing this match on Coliseum Home Video, and I was excited to revisit it, because I didn't have fond memories of it, because, you know, I thought even for the Undertaker character, this concept stretched believability a little bit. They were going to have a buried alive match. All right, we've had casket matches, and that's one thing. You get thrown in a casket, you get wheeled to the back, you pop out of the casket. The idea and the way that they're selling this match, which, as we get into it, you know, they make it a little bit more believable towards the end. But anyway, the way that they're selling this is someone is going to be buried alive, put in a grave with 6 feet of dirt piled on them.
And take a dirt nap.
Yes. Someone is going to die. Which, to me, stretched believability a little bit. Even with everything that The Undertaker does.
That's
even
hilarious.
Flying up out of the casket. I know, like, he's a supernatural character.
Right.
It stretches that. But this, it was a little bit too much. It was a little cheesy. I couldn't get into it even as a kid. It just seemed a little bit, so I couldn't take it seriously. I couldn't suspend my disbelief enough about that. And I think maybe that's why this pay-per-view, I don't think it has a really fond following.
It's a one-match show.
Mindset about it. Well, it's also that, too. Again, like we talked about with Mind Games, this show sucks.
Yeah, there's something I want to point out.
Else on this show.
There's something else I want to point out. It's historically cool at the beginning of this show, but yeah, at the time it was nothing. But yeah, I think it's interesting you pointed out, because that's funny. As a 10-year-old, you couldn't even suspend your disbelief that far for this.
It was too much.
Someone's going to get murdered on pay-per-view in a WWF ring. So yeah, that's crazy to think about. I didn't think about that.
Kind of like the gold dust stuff. A little bit too much. Pushing the boundaries a little bit too much. And Buried Alive, for me, was pushing it a little bit too much. But I'll talk about that towards when we get to the end, too. But at the beginning, like I said, you've got the headstone that everyone's passing by, this whole, all this buildup, and there's nothing, there's no tune-up matches on any of these episodes of Raw. Mankind and Undertaker don't compete from Mind Games up until Buried Alive, but on every episode of Raw, there's this running thread, this match gets built up. There are some promos on every episode of Raw, one of Undertaker and one of Mankind in a graveyard, cutting promos on each other.
All there. Mankind, last night, you witnessed who truly is the master of the mind game. And Mankind, I have condemned you to eternal damnation. Mankind, I am going to bury you alive, and you will never rest in peace.
I'm sure you can find these on YouTube. We've probably posted them already on our Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. You got to watch these.
Yeah.
They are something else, man. They're unreal.
In like
very
a good
unreal.
And a bad way.
Yes.
And like a so bad it's good way.
It's very confusing. I saw the first ones and I wasn't sure if they were in separate graveyards or something like that. But no, clearly the story being told, they're in the same graveyard. Mankind does something and then Undertaker appears later in the night. He picks up something that Mankind left behind as he was digging up the grave. Undertaker has been digging up the grave and Mankind jumps in it at one point and says,
he says this is too small for Undertaker because he's standing up and his head's coming out of the ground.
Mankind is digging in the dirt with his hands saying,
"No, Mankind, you don't need to do this. You don't understand. What if you don't have to. He will come. He will come. But the Undertaker will dig his own grave, and then you will bury him alive."
It's hilarious. Oh. It's great.
Yeah.
It's cheesy, but it's great. Very entertaining.
It's fun. It's fun to watch. And then, oh man, Undertaker gives this promo about...
Who could have thought that it would come to this? Each time you escape the clutches of these purple fists, you grew stronger, yet more evil.
And I don't even remember the rest of these. I just laughed so hard. So it was perfect, man. That's. I wish he had a shirt that said these purple gloves on it. Like Braun Strowman has get these hands now.
We could have that. We might.
Yes.
Yeah, we might have that. This. If someone can explain to me this plot line or what's actually happening here, I don't know if they're literally in the cemetery. Are they building the graveyard that is being built at the Market Square Arena as Jim Ross keeps hyping up that they're going to build an actual graveyard in this arena. You got to come see it.
That's what I'm saying is Undertaker wastes his time digging this hole here because they're going to build one at the pay-per-view in Indianapolis. So bless his heart. But you know what? Just like when he built his own caskets, digging his own grave.
Oh, my goodness.
Who knows? For all we know, they could have cut out the chunk of land here and just transported it to Indianapolis.
That's true.
I'm kidding, people. But seriously, he's a man of his own, you know, he gets his hands dirty, literally and figuratively. He builds his own caskets and coffins, and he digs his own graves here, apparently, so.
And he says something very chilling in that last promo on the Raw right before Buried Alive. He says, Undertaker says, if it takes destroying the Undertaker to destroy you, mankind, then that is what I must do.
Yeah.
So he has reached a new level. The announcers keep saying the Undertaker showing another side. He must have 30 different sides to him that we've seen so far because he's always showing a new side to himself in every match. But here he has kind of reached his limits. He's gone crazy with this villain that he can't destroy, mankind. And now he's willing to destroy himself to get rid of mankind. Kind of sounding like a...
It's like Dark Knight, right?
I was just going to say
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
Batman is willing to take himself out in order to say, you know, clear Two-Face or whatever, you're going to take it out and then Joker out. So yeah, very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So that's the build-up, and we'll dive in because we got a lot to talk about with this match, right?
Yeah.
October something.
20th.
October 20th.
Yeah.
1996. You always got a date. I never have a date guy.
But yeah, we didn't give dates to those episodes of Raw because it's just literally every single week in between Mind Games and Buried Alive, you want to go watch. There's a Mankind segment and an Undertaker segment. Again, they're in... For all we know, the same cemetery. Who knows?
It has to be. Yeah.
So, it's raining at one point, and then it sounds like they have the umbrella mic'd up because the rain is just pounding on it. But anyway, onto the pay per view. Again, it's in your house. Themed around Undertaker. The entrance ramp, like the is a cemetery gate, which I thought was really cool. Again, production, man. Undertaker gets all the money he needs, I guess, from Vince McMahon to build this up, which is really cool. You know. And I always enjoyed the themed entrances, like when WCW would do Halloween Havoc and Bash at the Beach. This gives it a cool feel.
It feels like that.
Yeah.
This is October pay-per-view.
Yeah.
They're leaning into that.
Halloween style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's cool. But there's this huge mound of dirt and a shovel and a headstone. And, it's the same headstone that's been in every episode of Raw last month. But again, just cool, really cool production for yet another signature match of The Undertaker that we're going to see several more of as we continue down this road here. But one thing I wanted to mention is that the opening match, the curtain jerker of this show, is Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, how about that?
Exactly, yeah. What are the odds? Them opening the show. But I want to say this is that this is the debut of the Glass Break music.
Yeah,
so again, at the time, because you and I just watched the last episode of Raw before this, and he has the old Ringmaster music. It's October 14th, I think it is. But on this show, he debuts that music. But again, in the audience, they've been like, what? I didn't know you got new music,
right?
You know? So,
yeah, who knew?
But like, who knew like how iconic that would become? But I just wanted to point that out. I thought it was really neat.
Very cool.
That we got to experience that as we're going through Undertaker's career. That's going to become an iconic song, and we'll hear it plenty of times as we continue down this road with Undertaker, and as he and Stone Cold will cross paths. So.
And it's not a great match by any means. It doesn't live up to the standards you think of a Triple H Stone Cold match. I forget, Triple H is replacing someone. I can't remember. Someone's hurt. Savio Vega, I think.
Probably Savio.
He fights Undertaker. But yeah, this whole pay-per-view is out of whack, but I did notice something, too, as we were watching it. Not as significant as that, but, you know, I didn't ever realize back then, back in the day, how much of 1996 WWF really relied on early 90s WCW guys filling up the card. You know, their entire undercard was basically in WCW a year or two ago.
Isn't that weird?
Triple H, Steve Austin, Brian Pillman, Mark Miro, Johnny B. Badd, Goldust, Dustin Rhodes, Vader, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley. I mean, just a year later, for some of these guys, they are filling up the WWF card. And it reminded me a lot of what we see nowadays, because really, lately, TNA, it's like, we've seen a huge TNA invasion in WWE, but the past couple of years, Ring of Honor, like these guys that were the mainstays there for so long, and so much of current day WWE with Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, or then you got Bobby Roode, AJ Styles,
Mojo.
I was trying to think, Rockstar Spud just debuted a couple weeks ago. All sorts of these guys.
Yeah.
It's really making up. Yeah, I don't know. I just think that's interesting.
We
think of WWF having their homegrown stars, not wanting all this other talent, but sometimes
they do. As much as they crap on WCW for talent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I mentioned it last episode. They keep pooping on WCW for stealing their top stars. Well, they're just stealing the undercard.
Yeah.
And trying to replace it. And eventually, they will go on to, you know, main event. You know, like, we know with Stone Cold and stuff like that. But, yeah, it is very interesting. I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's really... I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
Ron Simmons, too.
Ali, former world champion WCW. First ever black world champion.
Well, this feud has been epic, of course. We don't need to recap Undertaker Mankind feud, but there is a video highlighting the entire length of the feud before the match, so it's cool to go back and see how it's been going. And really, I mean, if you think about it, this feud has been unlike any other WWF feud ever. It's really escalated to new heights. It's been very intense, more so a different style of wrestling than we've seen in the WWF in a lot of ways. And it really kind of set the template for a lot of The Undertaker's feuds in the future. It's kind of revealing. It's cliche, but it's revealing another side of a layer to The Undertaker as a character, as a performer, and as an in-ring wrestler.
Absolutely. And I think it's a precursor to the Attitude Era in and of itself.
It really
how personal the rivalries get, the feuds get, and just how they, you know, one match, a regular pinfall match is not enough. You got to go to something else, because we'll see so much, you know, innovation in the Attitude Era with Falls Count Anywhere or ladders or Hell in a Cell or whatever, hardcore matches, whatever, everything, a regular, you know, a match can't be contained in the squared circle anymore.
No,
it's
non-sanctioned. They make a huge deal of that. The WWF is not sanctioning this, which means that they're not responsible for whatever these two guys want to do to each other. Apparently, one of the announcers says they both asked for this.
Yeah.
They wanted something like this. So, if that's the case, this is non-sanctioned. Tell me why there's a referee in the ring, WWF referee in uniform. In the ring.
I was going to bring it up too. I have no idea.
I don't get it.
I've never understood that in any of these unsanctioned matches that we ever come across. You know, it's like, this is the first one, but we'll come across some others in history, you know, as WWF progresses. But yeah, why is there a referee? It doesn't make any sense.
No.
I have no idea. Is he
just
there to raise
the
hand? Yeah, what's his job?
He's not counting a pinfall.
No.
It's whoever goes in the grave.
Yeah,
wins.
The crowd can see who buries someone alive. We don't need a referee there.
He serves no purpose.
I guess he just kayfabe wise, he doesn't. But I guess he just there to give time cues.
Exactly.
I guess. So.
But it's just it's pretty silly.
Yeah. But I do love Jerry Lawler say, he's like, what does that even mean? I'm saying, like, I think it's something to shoot, too. He's like, what? What does that even mean? And Vince, explains, like, what you just said. Like, we're not responsible or liable for whatever happens. So.
We've got Vince and Lawler on commentary. So.
Well, because JR has disappeared. Throughout the show. Again, this is still the whole fake Diesel, fake Razor. They've debuted by this point. JR is kind of a heel, but I don't know what he's doing.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's so
weird to go back and watch.
Yeah, it's awful. But, so at this point in the show, his mic is cut out, I think, and he leaves. And so it's just, we just have Lawler and Vince. But if you turn on the show, JR is there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But he has no microphone. So, anyway.
Undertaker comes out again, as we've said on the last show, no entrance gear. He's been just stripped down. You know, he's seeking revenge. He's not there. put on a show or anything like that. He's there to fight, so no hat, no gear, nothing like that. Yep. And the Fireflies are out again, and I didn't notice it in the last one, but I just thought about this one. Those are lighters. Those aren't people holding up their phones. Those exactly. Are, and there's a lot of them in the crowd. People throwing their lighters up. But I'm Undertaker, man. That's cool.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, you're right. No one brought a flashlight. So yeah, it's their lighter from their pocket. So that's hilarious. You wouldn't see that nowadays. So
there's kind of like thunder and lightning as part of the entrance, and the king says it's raining.
Yeah, he says it's raining. So that was weird. But one thing he does say when Undertaker's walking out, he says he looks right at home beside the grave. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Mankind and Bear came out first, right? And Mankind's just sitting in the ring rocking, and yeah, that's when Undertaker comes out to that. And yeah, I mean, just like the last few matches we've been mentioning, he gets in the ring and boom, slugfest, man.
Yes.
Right as he gets in, which is good, again.
That's the way it should be.
It's the way it should be. That's the way this feud is gone. It's the way the story's been told. They should not care about grappling and you know, he wants to hurt Mankind. He wants to, again, like you said, he's willing to end the Undertaker just to take out Mankind. So that's pretty cool.
Undertaker's on fire, like you said. Mankind nuts. Throws him into the corner, and Undertaker just no-sells it. Picks up Mankind, throws him into the corner, and then he tosses Mankind out, jumps on the top rope, and leaps to the outside from the top rope onto Mankind, like a flying whatever. Like, it wasn't a clothesline, it wasn't anything.
It wasn't a crossbody, he just leapt on it.
It was awesome.
But that's the first time we've seen Undertaker go to the top rope and jump to the outside.
I think
for a big guy like that, I mean, that is... I just wrote, what the heck? This is crazy.
He's going nuts.
He's just, letting it all hang out. Again, he's willing to destroy himself. And the commentary puts that over. He said he's willing to destroy himself, destroy Mankind. So I just wrote, he almost did there. I mean, because what a dangerous spot, you know? Jump to the outside. Because he doesn't jump on the mats. He jumps on the aisleway, like the concrete. And he lands on his hip when he hits him. So
yeah, just reckless abandonment.
It was ugly, but it was good. It's awesome. It makes it feel more real. Mm-hmm. The stuff doesn't look so choreographed and practiced, you know? It looks real, so it was fun. And then they kind of fight their way up the aisle a little bit toward the, like, mound of dirt and
the grass.
Right
to the grave, yeah.
Yeah. And Mankind, or Undertaker goes to grab the shovel. Mankind kind of grabs it and hits it, like, the butt of the shovel, I think Lawler says, in the throat of Undertaker. So that's a pretty dirty move there. Yeah. But, and he goes for a suplex on the mound, and Undertaker reverses it.
And this, you know, we talked, I think it was one of the matches with Goldust.
Yeah.
The second match with Goldust, I think.
Maybe 3 episodes ago.
The Undertaker busted out a small package in that match, which I had never seen him do before or since. But in this one, like you said, Goldust goes for, or Mankind goes for a suplex, and Undertaker, like, reverses it into that small package.
Again!
They're on top of the gravesite, and then they just roll together in their small package bundle all the way down the hill, like 3 or 4 times, rolling over to the ground. That's how Undertaker blocked Mankind.
That's how he chose to block that. Again, it looks like something out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
It was hilarious.
It's hilarious. Not supposed to be, but it was. But yeah, he grapevines a leg or whatever and rolls him up, and they just tumble down the hill.
I wonder if they were laughing as that happened.
Mick Foley had to be. It was hilarious, man. Golly, go watch it just for that. It's so funny.
And then I also laughed because at this point, the camera zooms in on some fan in the crowd for like 5 seconds for no reason. And Jerry Lawler says,
"And indeed, someone is going to take that proverbial dirt nap, ladies and gentlemen. Ooh, right here, live. What if her Undertaker knows she got up? Beg your pardon? There are a lot of creatures of the night here in Indianapolis. She looked like a creature, all right."
I was just like, golly. Harsh. It's not even Paul Bearer's making fun. It's a poor little fan in the audience. So, yeah, at this point, they've taken themselves back to the ringside. And commentary keeps saying dirt nap. Dirt nap. Someone's gonna take a dirt nap tonight.
That's the
a
word.
Dirt nap. Yeah. That's again. That's the calendar. Vince McMahon's calendar. You know, word this week is dirt naps. So they keep saying dirt. Which has anyone ever called? When you go to a funeral, do you go see someone take a dirt nap?
No, I hope not.
You don't. It's just like ridiculous. So
yeah, don't say that the next time you go to a funeral. Sorry, your uncle's taking a dirt nap.
That might not go well. So
unless you're Jerry Lawler, you probably get away with it.
But I wrote, when he said she looks like a creature, I just wrote, man, that was so much like Heenan. Like, that reminded me of Bobby Heenan. He would have said the exact same thing. So I just appreciated that little comment. about the poor little girl in the audience.
Yeah.
She wasn't that bad.
No, like, wow.
So, for 96, so, yeah.
They start fighting the crowd here, which, and,
yeah.
Undertaker just hurls Mankind over the barrier, and then he runs from the crowd and hits a leaping clothesline over the barrier. Man, I'm, like, loving this so far. It's all Undertaker. He is just beating the crap out of Mankind, tossing them all over the arena. It's awesome.
Yeah, and he's when they're in the audience for that brief, you know, 20 seconds before he throws Mankind back over, there's folks in the audience just cheering him on. And one lady's asking for a high five. She's in her sweater, like, hugging for a high five. But, yeah, it looks like, again, it looks like he's making it up as he goes, which who knows if he is or not, but, like, he chunks Mankind back over the guardrail to the ringside and then just runs and jumps, like you said, and it just shows how athletic he is, you know? He's jumped from the top turnbuckle to the outside and then he jumped over the guardrail. It's just such a contrast from his earlier matches, you know, especially ones with, like, King Kong Bundy or IRS or even Hogan, man. Like, it is so, so different, you know?
Yeah.
We keep, like you said, it's cliche to say he's different. Different style of Undertaker, but he really is, man. And after that, he just headbutts him like crazy over and over again. They're in the back of the ring, and he goes for old school. And this is classic right here, man. He goes for old school, but Paul Bearer jumps up and pulls the top rope, and that makes Undertaker fall and crotch himself on the top rope. And
Smart.
Yeah, that was just perfect.
He knows Undertaker better than anybody.
Exactly.
So he knew what Undertaker was going for in that moment, and he knew to trip him up right there. Give Mankind control.
Perfect heat for Paul Bearer and Mankind at that point.
Mankind gets a spike from here from Paul Bearer, like a wooden
instrument
spike.
They say.
And starts just stabbing Undertaker with it. And Vince McMahon is freaking out.
He's saying,
but it's non-sanctioned. But Vince McMahon is saying, he can't be doing this.
I know.
There has to be some sort of order here. It's non-sanctioned, no holds barred. And Jerry Lawler's like, telling him, it's not saying, do whatever he wants. And Vince McMahon's like, well, there has to be some limit to what we see here. That's crossing the line for Mr. Man, is that spike.
Once again, it seems like everybody's not on the same page. So you're the one who wrote this stuff. So. But
Undertaker gets the spike, and he gets to use it, and then Paul Bearer.
Rest in peace chance at this point, too. Again, not orchestrated by Mr. Bearer's opus. It's just organically, man, the crowd, you know, when he gets that spike or that instrument and starts using it, there's rest in peace chance all over the place. So it's really cool to see. But then go ahead, what you're going to say.
Just a lot more going on. They get a chair in here and get some chair shots on each other. Paul Bearer hits Undertaker with the urn, and Undertaker no-sells it.
And then Vince calls Paul Bearer a slug. it's not Lawler. I guess now that Bearer's the heel, Lawler has to ease up on it because he's the heel commentator.
I guess.
Vince calls him like, slug. I was like, oh, man, that's great. Jabba the Hutt style. So another Star Wars reference here. As Bearer tries, he hits him and Taker no sells it, and then Vince calls him a slug, and Taker turns back around and takes a ugly chair shot to the head that completely dents that chair. I mean, that chair is, you can't sit in it again.
It was ugly.
It was nasty. Again, back then it was just like, that's what it was, but watching it today, it hurts. It hurts me. He takes that unprotected chair shot straight to the head. And then Mankind does that cool move where he sets Undertaker against the ring steps and does the running knee, which he's done against, you know, he's done it in the boiler room and he's done it all over the place. So
so from there, they kind of head back to the grave site again, and they end up both, Undertaker gets tossed into the grave and he pulls Mankind inside of it. So they fight inside the grave for a little bit.
Nice little tease.
Because they haven't
entered the grave yet. So
And then, I mean, that chair shot was nasty. But then Undertaker hip tosses Mankind from the top of the gravesite to the floor.
Yeah.
It was, you know, at least 6 feet down to the aisleway. Just unprotected, lands straight on his hip and his back.
Yep.
And
I just wrote, no wonder Foley can't walk.
That's why he can't walk. Yeah. Exactly.
It's just, it's almost too much commitment to the character. You've got to protect yourself.
It's bad in hindsight.
Yeah, in hindsight. But, like, it looks awesome. Again, it looks vicious, you know? It looks ugly. That's what these fights between them are. They're ugly fights, you know? They don't feel like a wrestling match. They feel like brawls, prison riots.
Yeah, prison
riots. JR would say here. But he doesn't have a microphone. So, anyway, then they get back in the ring. They work their way back to the ring, and Mankind hits a wedgie pile driver. And he starts yanking his own hair out, and then Taker comes back with a flurry, a punches, mm-hmm. and then Paul Bearer slides a chair in the ring at this point.
I wasn't sure it was Paul Bearer because you just see the chair magically yeah, slide in the ring.
Yeah,
if you don't see who threw it in there, it just chair comes sliding
yeah.
in.
Yeah, it just like slides in from stage left. You know who did it, but I think commentary said something about it. But
yeah,
then,
no.
Did Mankind hits a double underhook DDT on there? Yeah. Is it the first time?
Dude Love.
It's the first time we've seen that.
That's the first time I noticed it. Yeah.
I love that move. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's a Dude Love. What's that move called?
Just
the double underhook DDT.
Yeah, I don't know if he has a name for it.
But yeah, he hits it on the chair, which is cool. And then he sits there rocking with the urn, mm-hmm. and Taker sits up and, oh, hits nasty chair shot on the Mankind's back, which that's what you see nowadays. You see chair shots to the back.
Yep.
You don't see him to the head. But this one was brutal even for today's standards.
So. It was. They got some more back and forth. The leg drops, ooh. The chair onto Mankind.
Yeah, page out of Sabu's book, man.
Yeah.
Vicious.
Back and forth again for a little while. There's so much to get through. I was just kind of jumping around. But my favorite part of the match came next. A little bit later on, they go outside. And Mankind pulls up the mats to do the pile driver again. On this little wedgie pile driver onto the unprotected
exposed floor. Yeah.
At this point, Undertaker, I'm pretty sure, makes up a move on the spot. He goes to reverse the pile driver. So he's in pile driver position. He stands up and he's holding Mankind's legs, like at his head. And I think he's gonna do Hardcore Holly's Alabama Slam.
Yeah.
That's how he's holding him. But Mankind still has his arms wrapped around Undertaker's waist. And so Undertaker, at this point, just sits down on top of Mankind's head. It just like falls backwards onto his face, into the stairs. And again, I laughed out loud for the second time in this match because I don't think that's a move. But Undertaker just did it on the spot, and it looked like it hurt. So
yeah, it looked awful, man.
Go for it, man.
Yeah, and we talked about my wrestling dummy that my aunt made me back in the day, and I used to do that move to him. I called it the backseat driver.
Well, maybe he got it from
him
you.
Like an Alabama slam and
great minds.
Fall down. So maybe I stole it unconsciously from Undertaker. But yeah, it's disgusting. It's dirty. And yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but it works. And then they get back in the ring, and Undertaker's got the stairs.
Yeah.
And he throws him in the ring, and he just beats Mankind over and over again with him. Then he hits Tombstone.
Tombstone. Crowd goes nuts.
Oh, blows up, man. Yeah, they come alive. Because he points to the grave.
Yeah,
you know,
he's selling
seen
it.
People pointing to the WrestleMania sign recently, and he points to the grave, and he knows what he's doing, man.
Oh, he's great.
There's people in the palm of his hand, and they go nuts. So then he kind of does like a fireman carry all the way to the grave, right? He just kind of puts him over his shoulder and walks him back there.
Paul Bear, or Jerry Lawler says, Paul Bear, if you don't do something quick, next thing you're going to be doing is buying flowers. Mankind's funeral. But yeah, he picks
dirt
him
nap.
Up for his dirt nap. Carries him all the way to the grave and gives Mankind a chance to recover, I guess, because Mankind goes for the mandible claw before getting tossed into the grave. Tries to hit him with the urn, then Undertaker is able to choke slam Mankind into the grave again.
Yeah.
Just a nasty looking fall and bump. The crowd pops huge, and I did not remember this. Undertaker starts shoveling dirt on top of Mankind. And the bell rings.
Yep.
And the Undertaker wins this match. So I didn't remember the Undertaker winning this match because I remember all the aftermath
that
we're
going
to get to. But actually, Undertaker won this match. The announcers say all he has to do is put a layer of dirt on top of the Mankind. All he has to do is get a little dirt on there and the match is over. So apparently, in kayfabe, like in this world, this match was supposed to end sort of like a casket match.
Yeah.
Like you just close the lid, push it to the back, and then get up. This match was supposed to end. Someone gets thrown in the grave. You toss
one shovel of dirt on them.
They're allowed to get up. Because the Undertaker just keeps shoveling.
Yeah.
The referee tries to stop him. Vince McMahon is saying, it's over. The match is over.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you trying to do to him here? You're getting carried away. Because the Undertaker is trying to
bury him
alive fully.
Yeah, he's pushing referees. Several referees come out. He throws them all off the mound. You're right. But yeah, the match is over. 18 minutes and 25 seconds. I didn't remember he won either because I remember everything that's about to happen.
Exactly.
You know, I forgot.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
About all this, so, yeah.
And that's his first ever win against
Mankind.
Yep. He's lost two so far and finally gets a win.
Yep.
gets a win there, but not not in the war.
Exactly.
So he wins the battle, but not the war. Because as Undertaker is beating up the referees, a mysterious masked man comes and whacks the Undertaker from behind with a shovel and starts digging up Mankind.
Yep.
That man would go on to be known as the Executioner, would go on to have a match and play a part in the Undertaker for the next 2 months, not very long. And he, of course, would be the legendary WWE Hall of Famer Terry Gordy in a very sad state,
yeah.
I would say.
Oh, man, it's pathetic.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, at the time, it's not like somebody that you know, an established character, is coming out to help. It's like this man in like a mask.
In like a Target Halloween costume.
Yeah. It looks like the guys from Beastmaster. They eat people's skin and swallow them whole. It looks like that. It reminded me of that. And I was like, what is this outfit he's got on?
It's so cheap looking.
Yeah.
And he, you know, I know Terry Gordy now. I didn't know Terry Gordy then. And he was kind of before my time in World Class and even in WCW. But, man, Terry Gordy was a beast.
Mm-hmm.
He could go. He was in shape. He was a hoss, as Jim Ross
Steve
would
Austin
say.
Steve Austin loves him.
Yeah. He had suffered a lot of health problems before this point. Was literally a shell of himself. He's in very skinny, very awful shape. Apparently had some brain damage, too, before this had even happened. And so he was just... You know, Vince was kind of giving him a lifeline,
mm-hmm.
sort of giving him a paycheck, and they were giving him a chance, and we'll see that chance does not, it doesn't go well.
Right.
But here, he's just a mysterious man helping out Mankind and Paul Bearer, and so he digs up Mankind with what little bit of dirt is on him, pulls him out of the grave, and then they toss the Undertaker into the grave instead.
Yep. And the lights start to flicker, and thunder cracks, and the arena. Again, this is all the part I remember, so I thought that Mankind won this match.
Yeah, I thought.
Until we were doing research and I actually watched, I was like, no way. I know that Mankind wins this match.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he doesn't. But this is
surprised
all
me.
This is all the stuff that you remember is iconic here. Because, again, Mankind and who will become known as the Executioner, they're burying the Undertaker. You got Rest in Peace chants. They're actually pretty loud, Rest in Peace chants. And then now comes a who's who of heels here. We got Goldust. We got Crush as a... I mean, what do you call Crush at this point?
Jailbird.
Jailbird Crush? He looks like he's from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
But again, good friend of The Undertaker in real life.
That's true.
You got Triple H. You got Bradshaw. They all come out, Justin Hawk Bradshaw, to help bury Undertaker as Paul Bearer is encouraging them. And the Big D and I were speculating here, like, do you think that they just didn't realize how long it's going to take?
I don't know. Because
they did a rehearsal.
Yeah, they literally have a pile of dirt,
six feet of dirt,
and some shovels out of it.
Yeah.
Later on, when they did some Buried Alive, they had like a backhoe.
Exactly.
It's like some construction equipment to shovel that dirt on there. But they were literally going to shovel all this dirt on there. So they come out to help. I'm thinking they probably were looking at it in rehearsal or something during that day. And were like, this is going to take forever.
Yeah.
We got to get some help out here.
So they send these guys out.
And it was reminiscent of Royal Rumble 1994 when Undertaker, 13 guys came out and had to throw him into a casket. Mankind needs some help to throw the dirt and bury Undertaker alive. But it still takes forever.
Oh,
even
it still takes
seven
way
guys
too long.
Out there, six or seven guys,
yeah.
It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it does. And Paul Bearer is such a good cheerleader here, though. And
he is.
The
he's
rest
trying.
Of peace chants are getting even louder. And Paul Bearer is like, the Undertaker is gone forever. But at this point, there's people throwing trash at the heels.
Yes.
These people must be WCW fans because that was a common occurrence. Every Nitro would end with trash thrown in at the NWO.
Yeah, they're throwing it into the grave.
Yeah, there's like Coca-Cola like cups and like lids and stuff in the graveside at this point, so people were throwing trash at the hills. That's some good heat right there.
That's how they were killing time. See,
yeah.
I can make it into the grave.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
Throwing sodas in there.
And then Paul Bearer goes, and I was like, what? Now he's like Million Dollar Man or something? So he's paying all these guys to
Hey,
show
man,
them.
Yeah. Funeral home people make a lot of money, dude. That's
so.
A good industry to be in.
So,
I never go out of business there.
That's true. We're taking dirt naps all the time.
Vince McMahon is freaking out.
Yeah,
saying,
man.
You were only supposed to bury him alive, but not like this. Like how, Vince?
How
were they supposed to bury him alive? Not not literally, I guess.
Yeah. Then we get a grave cam shot.
We got the grave
Shows
cam.
Shows the dirt piling up.
Not during the match.
Exactly. going to say, not during the match.
Poor production, man. Yeah. What's going on here?
Usually they're on top of things, but this was not.
We've had coffin cam, grave cam, turnbuckle cam.
Yeah, who knew Undertaker got all his own camera shots?
He's a real innovator.
Yeah, so.
And this, again, like, I probably went on 5-10 minutes. It felt like 30 minutes of them just shoveling dirt. Vince is just, like, saying, well, I certainly hope something is going to happen here. Like, we've seen Undertaker always gets up. He always survives these things. And Jerry Lawler is sort of like Bobby Heenan here, too. When Bobby Heenan used to say Hulkamania is dead, Hulk Hogan's never going to get up. He said, nope, this is it. Nothing. He's dead, McMahon. He's dead. He's not getting up. Nothing can happen here. Finally, all the other heels leave.
They bail. Yeah, there's Thunder and Lightning come on.
That happens. Yeah. Thunder and Lightning in the arena. So the extra heels run out, but Mankind, Paul Bearer, Executioner kind of finish the job. They put the last couple shovels of dirt on there. And Paul Bearer, did you notice this? He holds the urn upside down.
I know. Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. I was going to point that out. I'm glad you saw it too. Yeah, I was wondering if that's like a symbolic thing, like, you know, like people do with other stuff, you know, whether it's a flag or a cross or whatever.
Paul Bearer knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he holds upside down, which, again, cool little nuance there, man. I'm glad we both noticed that. So, yeah, really neat. He knows what he's doing.
And they stick the shovel in the grave to symbolize that they're done. And the shovel becomes a lightning rod. A huge bolt of lightning shoots from the arena. Really, really cool special effect.
Yeah.
And hits the grave. Crowd pops huge, and the show ends with the Undertaker's hand rising up
out of
the
grave.
The purple glove rises up. Vince McMahon says, he will not rest in peace.
Yeah, and that's how it goes off the air. It's a cool visual, man.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of cheesy, but it's cool. But, like,
I don't know how they did it, man. I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't know how he got out of there. I don't know how they made it look like his hand was coming out of the grave.
Well, because his hand comes out of the grass part, not the actual dirt. So there must have been some trap door. Like, once he was finally in there, he rolled back in. But, again, we don't know. And they did
Pretty
it well.
Cool.
Yeah, they did it well. But it's really cool. But, you've been talking about how he's, like, he reminds you of, like, a monster from a monster movie and stuff. And, like, the villain that won't die or whatever. Even if he's a good guy. This was perfect for that to me. Like, watching this visual of his little hand sticking up and out of there, it's just like, man, he is like a monster from Monster Movie. He won't go away. And again, Vince is like, he will not rest in peace. And this is good, man. Good stuff. It was a really good, brutal match. Felt like they hate each other in real life, which they don't. They're friends. But it made you feel like that. If they can make you just suspend your disbelief, so you think they hate each other, that's really cool on them. So, really good stuff.
I had low expectations going into
it. Yeah, me too.
I enjoyed it, man.
Yeah, it was good.
It's hard hitting. It's brutal. It feels like a hardcore match, but really, just a couple of shovel shots, but they're really just, you know, it's strong style, I guess. I don't know. A
couple bumps for Mick Foley takes, but it's good.
It's brutal. And a different side of the Undertaker, and this is it for this iteration of the Undertaker. Last appearance of the purple gloves, of the purple...
Ooh, yeah.
What are those things called on his boots?
They're not
bootstraps. I don't know.
Bootstrap Bill. Barscarian. Yeah, I don't know. Well, purple bootstraps.
I don't know what you call those. But, and we're going to see, not to spoil it, but Survivor Series 96, the next evolution of The Undertaker, the next evolution in his appearance. As the show goes off, we see the Undertaker will rise again somehow, some way. He will fight his way out of the grave. Mankind cannot bury him. Paul Bearer cannot. The Executioner cannot.
Oh, goodness.
The Undertaker's spirit will live on some way or another.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, check it out, guys. It really is entertaining. It's fun. It's hard-hitting. If you're a storytelling fan like Big D and I here are, the story, again, is told over at this point. 6 months. Mm-hmm. It's cool to see that culminate here. So,
And you can fast forward through the rest of the pay per view. There's nothing else.
Just watch. Listen for the opening. Listen to the glass break for Stone Cold and the lack of a pop, and then go back and watch Raw 25 and listen to the glass break and how the Barclays Center blew up when he heard that, and just see how far that song has come.
That would be a great experiment.
Yeah,
he has music before. It was terrible. It's really
it sounds
slow.
Like Goldust music and Mankind's after music.
There's
so
many people.
The same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all the same. And they all have a piano. Jim Johnson have like this organ fetish because Undertaker has the same kind of music. They're all the same. So anyway.
You're watching Raw in 96, you can't tell who's coming out. Nobody has memorable music or anything like that. Unless you're the Godwins, except
Taker,
I guess.
And Taker and Shawn are the only ones that have, like, herbal music. Well, yeah, I guess the Godwins.
Oh, my gosh. I was telling you earlier, I feel like the New Day and the Usos wrestle every week now. They have nothing on the Godwins and the Smoking Guns back in 1996. They're on every pay-per-view, every Raw. I feel like they fight. Or the Body Donnas.
That's a six-month feud that's not good.
Good Lord, man. Versus the
Taker and
same match. Oh, man. Awful. Anyway, we want to hear from you, all the listeners out there, all the Talking Taker creatures of the night. Hit us up on Twitter, at Talking Taker. Facebook, give us a like. Follow us on Instagram, Talking Taker on Instagram. We would love you to subscribe and leave a comment, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Podomatic, YouTube, all that good stuff. Let us know. I was meant to mention this on the last episode, but just a couple other recommendations out there. If you have not watched the WWE 24 special that premiered on the WWE Network, it's a couple weeks ago by the time this is coming out, on WrestleMania 33 from last year. Go out of your way to watch that. The Undertaker's in it maybe for 5 minutes or so of, I think it's like an hour long, but it's just so rare to see Undertaker out of character. Him driving
shirt
to the arena. Yeah. See him with backstage before and after the match. It's worth. There's other cool stuff on that. Those 24 specials are always really, really well done. A lot of cool stuff with the Hardy Boys on there. But if you're Undertaker marks like us, definitely go watch that. And there's also a YouTube video I put on the Talking Taker Twitter a couple weeks ago of Raw 25. Again, Undertaker's in it for maybe 30 seconds or so.
Well, that's cool.
It's just cool to see him back there at the Manhattan Center again, talking out of character. You see all the DX guys talking out of character, too.
X-Pac and his dog. In a baby carrier. Yeah, cool stuff.
On his chest.
Yeah, good stuff.
It's worth checking out. And, yeah, that's what you get when you follow us on social media, all that stuff. We post stuff all throughout the week.
Yep.
Pictures, videos, all the build-up. We'll have all of the build-up for this match, all those funny promos before from Raw. In the graveyard. Those will be all over our Twitter and Facebook. And you gotta follow all of, and Instagram, because we'll put different ones on each one. So if you want to get the full picture, you gotta follow us on all of those accounts. And we follow you back, too. So you'll gain followers, too. So it's that simple. It's just like that. And we love it. We appreciate everybody out there listening and subscribing. It means a lot to us. We've got over 1,000 followers at this point. So that's incredible, man.
So thanks to all you guys. We appreciate it. This is episode 27, right? So... just over half a year. So and we're enjoying it. We're just a couple marks doing it for fun, so we appreciate all the input you guys give us and answering the polls we have and stuff like that too. And again, wait on someone to take us up on if you were there. If you were there, and
somebody
buried alive,
had to be a buried alive.
Yeah,
come on.
Someone was in Indianapolis.
You know they were.
So yeah, someone was there. Take us up on it. But other than that, go ahead.
Other than that, all I got to mention, Travis is here for my birthday. Turning 32 this week and still doing a wrestling podcast and still getting wrestling action figures for my birthday. Travis gave me, if you're a fan of the show, you will understand why this is funny. He gave me mint condition Irwin R. Scheister action figure.
The Elite Series.
The Elite Series. First time in the line.
Yes.
And I mean, it's an incredible figure. He's got the tie, the suspender. He's got monogram on his shirt. Just an impeccable figure that I can't wait to throw in the garbage.
Exactly. That's not what your dog did as soon as you opened it.
Well, as soon as I opened it, my dog walked over and started trying to eat this figure. He chewed off the top of it. So
he hates him as much as you do.
Yeah. You can see a picture of it on the Talking Taker Instagram page.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he also got me one of those, I don't know what they're
Funko
called.
Funko Pop, tiny little Funko Pop.
The mini ones that are in the packet, you don't know which one you're going to get.
It's a blind bag, yeah, you don't know what's inside.
Well, I opened it up and just happened to be good old Enzo Amore.
Rest in peace.
So, got a collector's item there, I guess.
That's a career taking a dirt nap, so. We'll leave that there.
On that note.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
I don't want to be buried alive.